Hey, I'm not trying to cut you off, but I got Andre Carson on the other line. I need to talk to him before he has to go down and do a vote, our congressman. Congressman Andre Carson is on our live line. Last night he was at the State of the Union. Congressman, how you doing?
Dr. Brown, always an honor and a pleasure.
Now, here's the first question. I'm watching the president come in. He's coming down the main aisle of the House, and he's shaking everybody's hand. He gets down by the cabinet, and he's shaking the Secretary of State's hand. He's shaking all the muckety-bucks. He gets in front of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. He starts shaking their hands, and I thought I saw the back of your head shaking the hand of the president. Was that you or Senator Cory Booker?
Well, Booker and I always joke. I'm the one with the mustache, but we were the same height, size, build, and everything. That was me.
That was you. I thought I saw it. Yeah. How did you get down front next to the Joint Chiefs?
You know, a lot of members camp out for hours, Amos, to get in that camera shot. I'm usually so busy, and I don't have the patience because I have other commitments with my committees and stuff. I just happened to walk in and put my coat down. I think someone surrendered a seat, maybe someone from the diplomatic corps. And I walked up and I met with some of the generals because I'm on armed services. And
right.
It kind of worked out.
And did you say anything as the president come by? Was it just, you know, hey, how you doing? And he shakes your hand and everybody move on.
I said, hey, Mr. President, good job. Good to see you. He said, hey, brother, good to see you. Looking good, man.
No, he didn't say brother.
Yeah.
Did he really say brother?
Yeah, he always says brother.
So what was your reaction to the speech? Because what struck me was in the beginning of the president's remarks, he talked about people.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I thought the speech was really appropriate for where we are right now in this country, personally. The president, he acknowledged that, you know, many of us are still struggling with unemployment and low wages. I personally felt that his tone was rightly optimistic, but he also made clear that we still have a long way to go. I was really glad to see his focus was on creating opportunities for the middle class,
mm-hmm.
and even mentioning the fact that we need to raise the minimum wage, extend unemployment benefits, and help businesses create jobs so we can get Americans back to work, particularly Hoosiers in our case. But, you know, all of these things seem like common sense messages, but with so much partisanship out here, Amos, I think we have to be reminded about the real reason why we're here to serve.
When the president talked about job training and tasking the vice president, in the words of the speech, to lead an across-the-board reform of America's training programs and doing training programs that talk more about on-the-job training and apprenticeship and tying schools into that, I thought he was talking about the things Governor Pence is talking about with his work councils.
Yeah, one would hope. You know, I think he rightly pointed out that a lot of our corporations are doing better than ever, but far too many people are still struggling. That's why job training, to your point, and placement programs are so critically important. If a business has a job available, they should have no trouble finding someone to fill it. So I think he was right in saying that we need to support small businesses, which really employ the vast majority of most Americans. But we also need to ease the burden of an overly complicated tax system that helps them to access markets like China, India, and so on and so forth. But since they are already responsible for 98% of American exports, that's a huge number of jobs. So I think we have creative and innovative people here in D.C. and particularly in Indiana who would love to start a successful business.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to make sure that the system doesn't stop them before they can even get off the ground.
We're talking with Congressman Andre Carson, his reaction to the State of the Union speech. One of the other things that struck me was when he talked about the woman that opened up a company in Detroit to help out Ford, and she walked into something the president called an American Job Center. I said to myself, do we have one of those here? And if not, why not?
Governor Pence has something similar. It's not that extensive. I don't have the name on me right now, Dr. Brown. I thought the state had, or the city had, something comparable.
Is that what Employ Indy is supposed to be
doing? Employ Indy, that's what I was thinking. Employ Indy.
Because it sounded like Employ Indy needs to go to Detroit and learn what they're doing in Detroit.
I think a job center is critically important. I know we can't do one as a congressional office, but we at least try to replicate those efforts by hosting our annual job fair, and we get a commitment from significant percentage of organizations to hire ex-offenders. That's something that's near and dear to my heart.
One of the other things the president did last night, he talked about the Affordable Care Act.
Yes.
And he said the speech that he should have given 2 years ago.
Yeah.
In terms of defending the Affordable Care Act and then telling folks, tell your kids sign up. Mama tell your kids to sign up. Kids get mama to sign up. Did some of you sitting here say, man, why didn't you say that 2 years ago?
You know, it's good to see him take a pivot. I mean, clearly the messaging ball was dropped. I think they probably needed an Amos Brown to preemptively work on that thing. But the messaging ball was dropped. But, you know, I was happy that he highlighted the fact that, you know, it started off problematic. But the reality is that millions of Americans already signed up for private insurance plans. We need to focus on getting more on board, particularly younger people. Because the reality is that the younger people will, in fact, push the effort and they'll fuel the effort. And so I invite our constituents to let us know how coverage has really had an impact on their lives so far. So it's time we start working together for the health and well-being of others. I know Governor Pence and his office are still in discussions with the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services on Medicaid expansion in Indiana, and it's overdue. It's unacceptable that we haven't had that expansion, and I think that my hope is that the state administration is seeing the need to work with HHS on remedying this critical issue. But you know, he highlighted the governor of Kentucky who was there, yeah. And I'm hopeful that a solution will be reached so that Hoosiers who need coverage can get the same access to Medicaid that folks in Kentucky, Ohio, Illinois, and Michigan are getting.
Somebody called earlier, just before you got on the line, appreciated what the president said about raising the minimum wage to $10.10, but expressed the concern that, okay, if I'm working 40 hours a week, it's $7.25, and you get the minimum wage raised to $10 and something, what keeps that employer from bucking me back down to 30 to 35 hours? And then there's like no gain. And is that the challenge in trying to, you know, push to raise the minimum wage, you know, making sure employers don't, you know, reduce workers' hours?
Yeah, you know, I was happy to see that, you know, the president highlighted raising the minimum wage in his speech. Of course, he mentioned a bill that I'm co-sponsoring that would raise the minimum wage to $10.10. I support this bill so strongly because I believe that, you know, hardworking Americans deserve an opportunity to earn a living wage. But I also applaud his announcement that he's raising the wage for federal contract workers to $10. I think that's an important step. My friends in organized labor have called on $15 an hour, which is a wise tactic because they're raising the bar high, hoping to come to a happy medium. And of course, there are critics of that proposal because folks want to measure outputs and that kind of thing. But I think $10 is clearly reasonable and long overdue.
We're with Congressman Andre Carson. Somebody just sent me a text at 37890, keyword Amos, said, I watched the speech, but what did the president say about federal unemployment benefits? He kind of threw the gauntlet down, you know, on that. He did mention that, and that got all y'all Democrats standing up, and the Republicans sat on their hands.
Yeah, it's kind of embarrassing. Yeah, I think the fact that Republican leaders allowed unemployment insurance to expire at the end of last year is absolutely shameful, and I applaud the president on calling them out on it. It's clear that my friends in the Republican Party are tied to a party agenda that I think even many of them in their hearts know that it's unacceptable, because the very constituents who put them in the office as we're recovering from our economic downturn are impacted. And my hope is that those constituents are paying enough attention to hold those elected officials accountable and possibly get them out of office, because we live in the wealthiest nation in recorded history, and there's no reason why we should have the kind of disconnect that we have with our Congress while people still suffer. You know, I was listed as the poorest member of the Indiana delegation, Amos. So just as an FYI, we still understand the struggle over here. God bless everyone else who's a millionaire, But I just want, I think what we're seeing in Congress is a growing disconnect between the haves and have-nots. So the sensibility for those who are in need, even those who are working hard, who have pulled themselves up by their bootstraps, to use their language, you know, hard times happen. It can befall anybody. It could befall me and you and anyone else, God forbid. But the fact that Republicans are standing firmly against extending the benefits tells me that we have a long road ahead. And the only way we can correct these matters is if the electorate is awake and willing to have a referendum this year on election.
One of the other things the president did is on unemployment was he mentioned the problem of people who have been out of work for a number of months and a number of years. And he said he was asking CEOs, quote, to give more long-term unemployed workers a fair shot at new jobs, a chance to support their families. The president said that I guess he's doing something this week, bringing CEOs there. I think it's the first time I really have heard the president talk about this problem, because this is something that affects workers from the age of 40 to 60. Who have been pushed out of jobs?
Yeah, it seems like the administration has done a pretty good job of reaching out to CEOs and small business owners to kind of get their input, and not just, you know, CEOs of Fortune 500 companies. I'm talking boutique operations, mom and pop restaurants, and even IT companies to see what kind of additional burden or cost it's going to have on their operation. I think studies have found that when CEOs are generous enough to provide these kinds of benefits, we see greater outputs within the organization, and we see organizational morale boosted tremendously.
With Congressman Andre Carson, so you were sitting there near the Joint Chiefs, and people have brought up to me the fact that several times during the speech, when the president talked about our troops, they cut to the shot of the Joint Chiefs, and they're applauding. And then when the president talked about, we're going to end Afghanistan this year, the cameras cut to the Joint Chiefs, and they're sitting on their hands. Did they really sit on their hands on that?
No, I didn't observe that. I think, you know, the Joint Chiefs, generally speaking, are a different kind of bunch. I mean, we're dealing with a kind of a warrior mindset, and I think most generals or most commanders always want the most resources available in lieu of an attack, or just in terms of preparation and having the best armed force. But I think it's absolutely clear that the president understands how critically important it is to shut down the Afghanistan operation. I was just reading the other day in the New York Times where President Hamid Karzai is accusing the United States of orchestrating the recent surge. So on, you know, just a year ago, he was praising the U.S. for our support, but when it seems like we're pulling out, he's now trying to style himself, at least maybe to the feudal lords and some other folks in that region, as being anti-American. So it's funny how folks switch when we pull our resources away.
239-1310. A couple of things. I thought the president talked more about our foreign policy in this State of the Union than I've heard him in the other four.
Yeah.
He was very clear on our support for Israel. He was very clear where we stand in this whole mess with Syria. He was very clear about Afghanistan. And he kind of laid out where we are with Iran and basically admitted, we really don't trust you, but we're going to try it. And if you mess up, it's going to be trouble.
Yeah, you know, the Congressional Black Caucus, we just had a meeting a couple of hours ago with the White House about the Iranian sanctions proposal. Well, you know, for the last several weeks, whether or not to increase sanctions on Iran has been a huge debate in Congress. Personally, I oppose these efforts because I think we need to allow diplomacy to at least work initially. We should not be doing the one thing that we know will derail negotiations. So I was happy to hear the president reiterate this point and reaffirm his position, which I share, and that is if diplomacy fails, we should immediately implement stronger sanctions. The larger question becomes if Iran were to get their nuclear efforts down to 5% and away from weapons-grade capacity, they meet the terms of the agreement, they are still considered a state sponsor of terrorism. Mm-hmm. And so we'll still have to wrestle with these issues after the agreement has been met and the 6 months are over with. But we'll get to that point and see what the P5 plus one decides to do from there on.
The last part of the speech, when the president, I have seen emotional endings of State of the Union speeches by other presidents, and every president, you know, kind of rises to the occasion.
Yes.
But when he started to talk about that Corey Remsburg, what was the mood in there? Because, you know, my eyes started to mist up. I've talked to people that said that was the highlight of the speech, and I could feel the ovation coming through the television, and one of the commentators thought it was the loudest that he'd ever heard in that chamber. You're down there next to our joint chiefs, you know, near the front of the room. What was that like?
You know, just talking to our legislative director, Nate, and our general counsel, Andrea Martin, about this, and Andrea told me that she was actually watching the State of the Union through the White House's website, where they showed, as the president was speaking, the initial photograph of when they first met overseas and when he was in the hospital. But I'll tell you, man, just to see him stand up, I saw him from where I was sitting on the other side of the house, and just to see him struggling, but he still had a sense of resilience about him.
And his military bearing.
And I got misty-eyed, as did some of my colleagues, and I intentionally looked over at the Joint Chiefs, and I could see that they were moved too.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you? I mean, if he's not a symbol of
all of our guys and ladies, yes.
Oh, absolutely. Of why we need to shut down our military operations overseas. We have over 700 military installations. We need to withdraw some of those installations and collapse them, but really get our troops back home and just really end this war effort and place greater accountability measures on our partners in that region. I'll tell you, man, I can't see how any member of Congress in good conscience could vote against raising their benefits or adjusting their COLA.
But it also talks to the wonders of the medicine as one of the unsung stories of the last 11, 12 years of conflict.
Yes.
That military medicine has been able to, in previous battles, Corey Remsburg would not have been with us. He'd have been with God.
Absolutely. The medicinal advancements that have taken place, to your point, over the past 10 years have just been phenomenal. A part of that is linked to our efforts with space exploration, and the staff gets nervous when I talk about that, but the technological advancement that have been made, we just have to applaud our wonderful physicians, and which is why sequestration hurts our scientific development, Dr. Brown, because as long as we're cutting funding toward research, we won't have the courage of the world and the stories to tell.
I said that was the highlight, and I'm sure every not only a service man and woman that's on active duty or in our guard, as well as retirees and veterans, they all were proud of that young man, because we kept seeing shots of him, and I'd already read. Skim the speech, skim the endings. I kind of knew what was coming, but the emotional, even though I knew what was coming, the emotional impact just blew me and I know the audience away.
I think he had the longest standing ovation in any State of the Union. I would guess. I know he certainly took the thunder away from the president.
But there's probably, that's the, if you're gonna, talk about people, because the whole speech was about, there were policies, but he personalized it.
This other person,
a lot of whom were in the gallery with, the First Lady and Dr. Jill Biden.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it did make an impact. So where do y'all go from here? Y'all gonna come together? We gonna have a kumbaya? Or is it, we gonna be fighting all year in Congress?
Well, if the electorate is disengaged, I think you'll see business as usual.
Mm-hmm.
We voted on the farm bill today. It certainly wasn't perfect, but Congress has failed. We faced serious partisan gridlock over the past few years. So many of us go to Washington every week hoping to make real progress on issues that Americans and particularly Hoosiers care about. but we can't focus strictly on repealing the Affordable Care Act or deregulating the oil industry, which seems to be their only ideas. I think we need to get serious about job creation, as the president talked about, extending unemployment benefits, reforming education in many ways, taxes and immigration. One of the true success stories over the immigration question has to do with our immigrant community coming to our country, to our state, and to our cities, creating jobs and putting Americans back to work.
Congressman Andre Carson, his reaction to last night's fifth State of the Union address by the President of the United States, Barack Obama. And we now know that when a President of the United States comes up to another brother and says, "How you doing, brother?" why do I think Nixon didn't say that? Why do I think Ronald Reagan didn't say that?
Well,
why do I think either Bush, 41 or 43, didn't say that? You never know. Bill Clinton might have, because he was the first honorary black president.
Well, yeah, I hear you.
Congressman, always good to talk to you. Thanks very much for being with us.